So hello and welcome back to another NCA Chats, and joining me is the familiar sound of Max Ashcroft today, but both myself and Max are delighted to be chatting to the newly appointed NCA Chairman John Inverdale this morning. And obviously many of you will know John as one of the BBC and ITV's leading sports presenters covering Wimbledon, the French Open, Olympic Games, and of course from a rugby perspective, the Six Nations and Rugby World Cup. So it's great to have him as the new NCA Chairman. And first and foremost, John, welcome to NCA Chats. I mentioned a few of those standout sporting events that you cover for the BBC and ITV, and I guess it would have been a very big summer of sport for you. So how's things been for you during this strange time? Because it always seems that summer is jam-packed normally with sport.
Yeah, I'm actually just looking at my lawn at the moment, which looks like centre court. It has had so much attention, it's not true. And there's one daisy on it, and I'm going to go out and get it in just a moment. I have just been mowing. I've been mowing to death every single blade of grass. There's hardly a weed to be seen anywhere. And I think all the events that haven't been taking place this summer, they actually could come to my garden. You know, if they just want to give me, I'm ready to go, honestly, because that's been the main focus of my attention.
Well, get Roger Federer and Serena Williams down to John Inverdale's garden. And instead of sort of speaking to Roger and Serena, John is stuck with me and Max for now. But of course, John, of course, is one of the is the new NCA chairman, and one of the reasons we wanted to chat to him today is because he's stepping into Norman Robertson's shoes. And I think first and foremost, we just need to give Norman a mention because he's done a fantastic job over the last 11 years. And myself and Max have worked with him closely, definitely for sort of four or five years now, and it's been brilliant to work with him. So in terms of yourself, John, I mean, both of you and Norman share a massive love for the lower leagues of rugby. So was it an easy decision for you to step into Norman's shoes?
Well, I mean, Norman is an ace politician. And when he did ring me up and ask me if I fancied doing it, my initial thought was, you know, going back nearly 30 years to the days of Rugby Special and when the game was going open and all that sort of stuff and looking at how rugby was administered, I remember thinking, and did think for many, many years, still do to an extent, you think, oh God, who are these people who are making these decisions? But they're not easy decisions to make because there are so many vested interests. And you learn, even now, having been in the job for, you know, barely a nanosecond, you learn how there are so many vested interests and there's no decision is easy to make. But if you are in the tent, to use that cliche, you at least have the possibility of being able to influence how that decision is made. You can write, you can be a broadcaster, you can be a journalist. Now, I had a column in the Telegraph for 17 years. And, you know, you can write and you can berate and, you know, you can harangue and you can do whatever you want. But ultimately, all you're doing is just throwing stones from the touchline. You're not actually doing anything on the pitch. And so in the end, I thought, you know, actually, maybe this is the right time to actually see if anything that I believe about the game or feel about the game, I can help to sort of steer it in that direction. So that was the motivation, really. It's very, very, very pure and simple, but that's what it was.
Yeah, and people know you, John, obviously, for your television work, but in rugby circles, I mean, it's quite easy to go on Isha's website and see the involvement you've had there. I think you mentioned at the AGM on Sunday, Alan was telling me that it's coming up to 35 years you've been associated with Isha. But just for people who may be listening to this and reading the article, just tell us a bit about kind of your background in rugby, because it's not just purely about Isha, is it?
No, I mean, I was at a university in Southampton and in Cardiff. I was captained Lincoln in the early 80s to when they were a very successful side. I found myself in Isha through a very circuitous route that I won't bore you with here. And I had, in a sort of rather nerdy kind of way, I had this ambition, personal ambition, for no interest, of no interest to anybody except myself, that I wanted to play 1,000 games of senior rugby. And I played 83 games one season in the early 80s. You know, I'd travel 50 miles for a pickup game on a Wednesday night under lights somewhere in Yorkshire, just because I was on this mission, heaven knows why. But I was, and I got to 973, and then sadly got a bad injury, and that was that. So that little ambition was but I do have the scars across many parts of me to say that I played the game never at the highest level, but I played it plenty hard enough to know how much it hurts.
You're closing in on 973 games, aren't you, Max, for Sedj?
Feels like that, but not quite that amount, no. Nearing 200, I think.
And just kind of on John becoming the NCAA chairman, Max, I mean, we've, like I said before, we've worked with Norman really closely, and it's clear to see his passion for the game. But just listening to John and speaking to John before we started this recording for the audio for this podcast, it's brilliant to have you on board, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great. It's great for the NCAA profile going forward. You know, Norman's put a lot of heart into the role over the years, and you know, I'm like John there as well, sort of leading it, leading more, shall we say. It's going to be great for the game and great for the semi-professional game going forward.
Definitely.
Thanks. Looking forward to it.
And John, just in terms of, you know, we said there, in terms of you're pretty much ingrained in National League rugby, and this culture and the core values of the game are really, really strong at the grassroots game. And we've seen during kind of this unprecedented time that, yes, clubs may be struggling financially because we've lost the game and they've unable to open clubhouses for events, but we've seen some fantastic work they've been kind of doing in the community and really rallying that support. Is that one of the more pleasing things that you've been able to see during your short time in charge?
Absolutely. And the key, you make the point there, that one, the extraordinary thing about the NCAA really, which is why I think it's underappreciated in the game as a whole, but I also think it's the responsibility of the NCAA to go out there and get more appreciated. And there are ways that can be done, which I'm sure we'll come on to in the weeks and months ahead. But the fact that you've got a product here, we've got a product here, that stretches from Canterbury to Tynedale to Lucktonians to Redruth, that's an amazing geographical spread, with everybody with the same, you know, core values, everybody with the same love of the same thing. And, you know, however that manifests itself, that's a great product. It's a great club. It's a great thing to be part of. And I think that's one of the objectives, I think, of the NCAA in the next 5 years, is just to get more people to understand within the game, but fundamentally outside the game, that actually you don't have to go and watch Saracens play. You don't have to go and watch Bristol if you're in the West Country. You can go and watch Dings Crusaders and watch a really good game of rugby. You know, if you don't want to watch Sale Sharks play, you know, you can go and watch Sedgley Park play. You know, if it's down your road, what you will watch is worth watching. And that's the absolute key thing. I think broadening the sport and broadening people's awareness, the quality of play in levels 3 and 4 is worth your time on a Saturday afternoon. And I still think there's a reticence on a lot of people's part who are sports fans. They say, oh, you know, don't you live quite near to X, whoever X might be? Yeah, but, you know, don't you live quite near to Roslyn Park? Yeah, I do, yeah, but, you know, I go and watch Harlequins most of the time, but, you know, if I go 2 or 3 times a season. Have you ever been to Roslyn Park? No, I haven't. Why not? Well, I don't know, really. I just have that. You know, that's what we've got to get over. Actually, it is worth your while going to these grounds, because you will enjoy it. That's fun. You know, you will enjoy it for your 10 or 12 or 15 quid or whatever it might be to get in. You will enjoy it. And I think that's one of the tasks that we all collectively have over, you know, the next seasons or so, to actually try and broaden the appeal of our level of the game.
And with that, John, you know, you cover the major rugby events. You have maybe millions and millions of people watching, you know, the Six Nations on the BBC or ITV, but going down to your local club just enhances your learning in the game, because people may watch rugby casually during the Six Nations, but going down to your Roslyn Parks and your Dean's Crusaders is massively vital for encouraging people to be more embracing of the sport.
It is, and you know, it's one of the great issues that we always have presenting rugby on BBC and ITV, is the knowledge that, you know, 90%, 80 to 90% of people who are watching, you know, if you're watching, doing a big game, England, Wales, and you've got 10 million people watching, 8 to 9 million of those people are not rugby people. They're not rugby aficionados. They really couldn't tell you too much about a lot of the laws of the game. So while the remit that the BBC and ITV have is very different to what Sky and BT have, because they've got a very small core audience who understand the game. We are, in many ways, Pied Pipers and evangelists, and we are the sellers of the game. And I agree with you that actually the NCAA clubs are, could be, should be, are great ambassadors for selling the sport. You know, if you watch England-Wales on a Saturday and you think, oh, this is a great game. This, you know, I wonder why do people think, if you live in, where would you live? You know, if you live in Ludlow, why do you not instantly, you know, you go, you somehow or other, I haven't quite worked this thing out yet, you somehow or other go to the NCAA website or you go wherever it is and you see that Luctonians are not that far away from you. Why the weekend after, which is the blank weekend on the Six Nations, and you haven't got anything particularly that you want to do, why don't you go and watch that game? What is it that's stopping you doing that, that's put that barrier in place that it doesn't actually occur to you to do it? Why is that? And I think if we can get over that hurdle, rugby at levels 3 and 4 can thrive big time. I really do.
And is it key as well, John, during this time, we talk about engaging fans when rugby's actually taking place, but at the moment we're all missing the sport and we're all missing all different types of sport, but rugby in particular is slowly making its way back, and it plays such a massive part in communities for people young and old. You know, it might be someone going down to the club for a pint with their friends on a Saturday afternoon, or it might be the mini and juniors playing on a Sunday morning. So is it important to try and keep these people engaged as much as possible with the local teams during this time?
It certainly is. I mean, I don't know about you, but I mean, the hardest thing for me about everything in the last few months has been the way that every day has morphed into every other day. You know, for me, Saturdays is just 3 o'clock on Saturday is still the greatest time of the week. It has been forever. Yeah, okay, matches on Sundays, and I love Friday night games. You know, I think actually Friday night rugby is a big issue that National 3 and 4 should be talking about. I'm not quite sure how, but I just think Friday night rugby at our level has a lot of potential. But 3 o'clock on a Saturday is that kind of sacrosanct time. And, you know, I think I actually, there's no political comment in this. It's actually just a very interesting book because I wanted to read it just to see what he had to say about the last 10 years of my life. But I couldn't believe last Saturday, two Saturdays ago, 3 o'clock on a Saturday, and I almost burst out laughing. I was on my own reading David Cameron's autobiography at 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. I was thinking, this is not what 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon is for. It really, really isn't. Mm-hmm. So the sooner 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon is restored to normality, the better.
Max, you agree with that? It might be a bus journey up to Tyndale, but it's still, you know, 3 o'clock Saturday afternoon, so sort of the linchpin of the weekend.
Definitely. I think it's those moments for the lads that play in sort of national leagues, you know, going up, doing a long bus journey and having that banter with your friends and getting up and playing in a packed background at like Luctonians or Tyndale. You know, those are the memories, those are the ones you're going to remember. And I think, you know, and then being on that bus back, having a few beers, looking at the results and finding out you're in a relegation battle. And so it's the fans, it's the players, and the volunteers make the National League so interesting. You know, and to John's point, it's how we can get people to these games, because I know that they will enjoy them. They're going to get such a high standard of quality, and also you're going to meet some really interesting characters along the way. And I would say to a lot of my friends, if you want to go for a beer at a weekend and watch a bit of sport, go for league game, you're gonna have a good afternoon. Yeah. And especially for a younger family that have got kids that enjoy sport, going and watching a game at Darlington or Roslyn Park is gonna be, you know, you're gonna have a good time. Yeah. So definitely missing Saturday, that's for sure.
And we talk about getting people down to the grounds, John, and in the last few years that I've been covering the National Leagues, the level of rugby has just increased and increased and increased. We're seeing title races going down to the wire. Max mentions there, relegation scraps going down to the final day. And it's just, you know, every single week seems to have something riding on it. I'm sure you've noticed that as well.
Yeah, listen, the quality goes up exponentially the whole time. But again, you know, if you're walking down the street, wherever you might be, who knows that? That's, I suppose, my job, your job, all of our jobs, to get people out there to understand that there is another way of spending your Saturday rather than just what you happen to be doing at the moment.
And if you don't mind, John, just a quick comment on Esher. I know it's a club that's so close to your heart. And I know, unfortunately, you guys were relegated last season and back international two South this year. And from an outsider looking in, it looks like it's been a quite a transition season for you guys. I mean, what did you make of the shortened campaign this year?
Yeah, it was disappointing. I mean, genuinely disappointing. I think we thought we'd challenge and we didn't. We weren't good enough, and it was as simple as that. So it's time to reappraise, and it's one of those different interesting things, how the great debate about metropolitan clubs as opposed to more rural clubs. You know, the issue that we have, which I'm sure anybody from Roslyn Park listening, and you know, whether you're Richmond or London Scottish or Barnes or Ealing or whatever, when you're in that southwest London little bubble, players move with great ease and alacrity, and creating a team that you can build season on season, plus of course the job situation in London changes so swiftly. People move in and they move out, and it's a very transitory world. Whereas you look at some of the successful clubs who are perhaps more town-centric in different parts of the country, where people have a job and they stay there, you can build a team over 3, 4, 5, 6 seasons. And bit by bit, you can build something that actually then becomes a successful operation. It's a lot harder to do that in London in particular. And I think we've suffered as a consequence of that, with a huge amount of player transition in the last 4 or 5 years. You know, and I think one of the key things that we've learned is you need to keep people for a while and let them grow to be part of the club, but also, you know, learn how their teammates play as well. And that bit by bit is how you're able to create a better side. So that would be our plan going forward, certainly.
Yeah, absolutely, John. And hopefully we'll see that plan implemented sooner rather than later. I know Max has not been particularly impressed that he's been returning to fitness training over the last week or so. But we're hoping to see we'll be back in our lives soon, John. And just finally, before we let you go, have you sort of got a message for these NCAA clubs at the moment? Because I know a lot of them have found it tough, but they're starting to get themselves back on the players returning to training, and hopefully there's light at the end of the tunnel. Have you got kind of a message for these clubs as the chairman of the NCAA?
Listen, I've been on the group that have been discussing when play might begin, and you know, a lot of the factors, at the risk of sounding like somebody from the government, a lot of the factors are way out of our control, and they're all down to our figures and scientific advice and medical advice and blah blah blah, and the nature of rugby because of its physical contact as opposed to fishing or golf or whatever it might be. You know, I think we're just, everybody's desperate to get started as soon as possible, and all I can say genuinely, you know, this is a game that is built on trust. You know, if you're at fullback, you trust the prop, and if you're at scrum half, you know, you have to trust your outside half and all that sort of stuff. Otherwise our game doesn't operate. People, you know, across the NCAA, you have to just trust that the people who are making the decision are doing it with all of our best interests at heart, because we genuinely are.
Very well said. Very well said, John. Well, it's been brilliant to meet John this morning virtually over Zoom, and we look forward to working with him over the course of, well, hopefully a long tenure, John. So thanks very much for your time this morning.
Cheers, guys. My pleasure.
And obviously, as always, many thanks to Max.
Cheers, Chris.
That's been another NCAA chat with John Emberdale.